You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. And today I'm joined by a colleague from KPMG's Compensation and Benefits Tax Practice, Eric Mishka. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks, Liz. Happy to be here.
So today we're going to talk through incentive-based compensation, including some very new rules about what is and is not allowed for incentive compensation in financial services. So Eric, I say we dive right in.
That sounds good.
So the FDIC and other federal agencies issued proposed rules on incentive-based compensation fairly recently. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's right. A few weeks ago, the FDIC, Office of the Comptroller, and the Federal Housing Finance Agency adopted a notice, what they call proposed rulemaking, to address incentive-based compensation arrangements at banking and financial institutions. This proposed rulemaking is required under Section 956 of the Dodd-Frank, Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, which we commonly refer to as Dodd-Frank.
So Dodd-Frank, that was almost 14 years ago, is enacted. So why don't you remind us what that act required in terms of incentive compensation?
Yeah. So Dodd-Frank required the SEC and other federal agencies to enact several rules on corporate governance regarding executive compensation. You'll remember that Dodd-Frank was born out of the 2008 financial crisis. At the time, there was this view by some that flawed incentive compensation practices at certain financial institutions within the industry were one of many factors contributing to the financial crisis. Accordingly, one of the requirements of Dodd-Frank was the SEC, Federal Reserve, FDIC, and other agencies to come together and finalize regulations that prohibit incentive-based compensation arrangements that encourage inappropriate or excessive risk-taking.
And what guidance have we seen in the 14 years since then? And so I guess these newly proposed rules aren't the first set that we've seen, right?
No. So thankfully, there's been some work done over the last 14 years. But as you can imagine, getting six federal agencies together to come to an agreement on proposed rules is not the easiest task. But regulators first proposed rules in 2011, and it focused mostly on the largest financial institutions and would ban them from providing pay packages that encourage excessive risk-taking. These firms would have to file in a report describing the financial incentives, including narrative descriptions of pay packages and the firm's compensation policy procedures. They received lots of comments, many comments, some for, many against those proposed rules. And financial institutions also started making changes to their incentive compensation plans after those rules were proposed and try to kind of get ahead of the agencies, if you will. So if you fast forward then to 2016, the initial proposed rules were revised and kind of re-proposed to reflect, the latest practices of financial institutions and to align with kind of rulemaking by foreign regulators. The U.S. isn't the only jurisdiction kind of going through this process. Australia, UK, Canada, other jurisdictions are also kind of putting some rules and finalizing rules around incentive compensation. So the 2016 kind of proposed rules really expanded the list of financial institutions subject to these kind of requirements. And they kind of grouped these institutions into three categories. Level one and level two are considered kind of the largest financial institutions, and they're subject to more prescriptive rules for senior executive officers and those deemed to be significant risk takers, while kind of smaller level three institutions would be subject to far less stringent kind of set of prohibition and disclosure requirements.
Okay. And so that's through 2016. And then how do the recently proposed rules compare to what we previously had?
First, the 2011 and 2016 proposed rules were jointly proposed by all six of those agencies, with the recently 2024 proposed rules only proposed by three of the agencies. And while only three of the six agencies signed on to these new rules, these rules really are kind of a re-proposal of 2016, kind of opening them back up to comment. While we have and they have received many comments since 2016, there kind of hasn't been a lot of action up until recently. And so they re-proposed these rules really to kind of open them back up to comments, as well as kind of add in some of the experience we've had, you know, the last 8 years, changes in industry practices and other developments, you know, since 2016. And they're kind of proposing some questions as well as alternatives, you know, provisions and kind of some feedback on those as well. But you know, as a kind of a summary, the prior proposed rules, you know, are intended to align, you know, incentive-based compensation with the long-term interests of financial institutions by making compensation arrangements more sensitive to risk. And similar to 2016, you know, they, you know, use a tiered approach based on, you know, size of an organization to really get to kind of the heart of how much risk a company can or an institution can take on. And so when we think about the covered institutions, the two largest asset sizes are those institutions with more than 250 billion assets. And then the next level would be greater than 50 billion, but less than 250 billion. Those two groups are kind of considered similar. There's some differences in the nuance of the rules, but overall, they're going to be subject to some of the same rules. And then level three is those institutions that have more than a billion in assets, but less than 50 billion. They're going to have a lot less stringent rules as proposed. And then moving on to covered persons, you know, these rules then would apply to not only institutions that fit these categories, but then individuals who are either senior executive officers. So, yeah, anybody with a title of officer is going to be presumed to be an executive officer, as well as the kind of the head of a major business line or control function. And then the next group is a little bit more nuanced, and that's, you know, those who are significant risk takers. And an individual could be a significant risk taker if they meet one of two criteria. One, the relative compensation test. And those are really looking at those individuals who are among the top five or top 2% of highly compensated individuals at an organization, depending on whether or not that organization is a level one or level two institution. If a individual is not, you know, meet the criteria of a highly compensated individual under this criteria, they still may be considered a significant risk taker if they're meet what's called the exposure test. And so an individual who has the authority to commit or expose half a percentage or more of capital of the you know, financial institution. So those are the kind of the gates of, you know, whether what these rules apply to based on institution as well as the individuals. And then there's a lot of, you know, like I said, we'll get into here some details around what the proposed rules are as it relates to compensation to these individuals.
Okay, great. That's helpful. So we've got the three categories of banks, the level one, two, and three based on the size of the assets of the institution. And then we've got the definitions of covered persons, the executive officers, or significant risk takers. Okay, so then with the proposed rules, what prohibitions or requirements are placed on incentive-based compensation for the covered persons at these covered institutions?
So they would generally prohibit incentive-based compensation arrangements, or you can call them bonuses, or, you know, other incentive compensation that encourage excessive risk-taking. And so incentive compensation would be required to appropriately balance risk and reward by including financial as well as non-financial performance measures, allowing non-financial measures to override financial measures. So think of quality, you know, measurement, for example. If, you know, there was non-quality or, you know, additional risk being taken on, those types of measures could override, you know, what would be paid out under a financial measure. And then be subject to, you know, adjustments to reflect actual losses that may have occurred after the bonus is paid out, inappropriate risks that were taken, potentially compliance deficiencies, or other measures or aspects of financial or non-financial performance.
Okay, so those are some of the things that we might see adjustments for. How actually would the incentive comp be adjusted maybe to reflect the losses or the inappropriate risk taken?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, when compensation is generally paid out to an individual, it's hard to get that money back. And so kind of thinking through that, the proposed rules for kind of those large level one, level two institutions would require at least some portion of the incentive compensation to be subject to a mandatory deferral. And so depending on the size of the institution, up to 60% of an award would be subject to a mandatory deferral, meaning that it would be the individual receive it at some point after they actually earned it or invested in it. And the deferral period can range from 1 to 4 years, depending on the type of compensation arrangement, the size of the institution, and whether that individual is a senior executive or significant risk taker. That does provide some ability before the individual receives it to claw back or adjust it, if you will. Additionally, there would be kind of a required consideration of forfeiture or downward adjustments if the individual receiving the compensation, you know, was an executive officer, a risk taker, and there was, you know, any sort of adverse outcome occurred, like poor financial performance, inappropriate risk taking, material risk management control failures, statutory, regulatory, or supervisory noncompliance, that, you know, result in some sort of legal action, or overall anything other than like poor performance or misconduct. So again, having this additional layer of adjustments to compensation. And then lastly, there's this clawback provision where if there would call any sort of kind of bad act occurred, so it's misconduct, fraud, intentional misrepresentation of information, that the financial institution would be required to kind of claw that compensation back. And that period of time to claw back would be a minimum of 7 years. So I will note that there's a separate Dodd-Frank Act clawback provision requirement that was just implemented by the SEC that applies to publicly traded companies that came out in the kind of fall, winter of last year. This clawback policy that would be subject, you know, to banks and other financial institutions is an addition or separate from that. And so banks potentially could have to focus on, you know, potentially two clawback, you know, requirements that they need to be aware of and comply with. So a lot of nuance and prescriptive rules that potentially, you know, banks and other financial institutions will need to comply with as it relates to their executive compensation.
Yes, it definitely sounds like it. And so any other provisions that we should be aware of in the proposed rules?
Yeah, so there's additional prohibitions on the amount of stock options to be granted to certain covered persons. Also limit on hedging activities, which I think is not necessarily new, but, you know, individuals won't be able to hedge against any, you know, decrease in value of incentive-based compensation. Also, the maximum of compensation that could be paid as a percentage of target would be capped. Relative performance measures that are based solely on industry or peer performance comparisons would also be prohibited. And then lastly, incentive-based compensation based solely on, you know, revenue growth or other kind of financial transaction type measures would have to also include a provision or measurement of quality or compliance with some sound risk management measure.
And what is sound risk management? Is that something objective?
You would hope, but it's a little subjective, and which makes this even more complex. But the proposal required kind of the establishment of, you know, a risk management framework where there's independent, you know, lines of businesses, including independent compliance programs, and that are, you know, those kind of risk management functions are commensurate with the size and complexity of the operations. That's a lot. It's hard to know, you know, where that fits in. But what a lot of banks today are doing is including risk management as a function in their design of the incentive programs to help kind of have a sound risk management process. Additionally, you know, the compensation committee, the board of directors would need to be entirely independent and not include, you know, senior executives on the committee. They would also get, you know, written input from institutions, risk and audit committees, risk management function, all on the effectiveness on risk measures and adjustments around compensation. So not only is risk management involved in the design of the compensation programs, but also involved in actual determination payouts and ensuring that there's not excessive risk being taken by participants in order to receive a payout. And then lastly, you know, covered institutions would need to maintain records for 7 years that document the structure of the compensation programs, as well as compliance with these proposed rules, and then have those available for disclosure to their supervising agency upon request.
So this has been a lot of information and all very helpful. I'm going to just dive into a couple areas further. One, you mentioned that the newly proposed rules provide alternative provisions based on changes in industry practice and other developments since 2016. So what are some of those alternatives?
Yeah, so looking to simplify the structure. So moving kind of to a two-level structure instead of a three-level structure of level of institution size, and really make this kind of apply mostly all to those, you know, banks greater than $50 billion in assets. Also replacing kind of that two tests for defining a significant risk taker with requiring institutions to really just identify who they believe are some risk takers and submit them to their primary federal regulator. That one, I think we'll see where that goes. I think having a definition of significant risk taker is helpful as opposed to relying upon an institution to identify theirs based upon their own criteria. But we'll see how that goes. And then requiring performance measures and targets to be established before the beginning of the performance period. Currently, performance goals are generally established from that first quarter of a performance period, if you think about an annual performance period. A lot of that has to do with the work that's done to close out the prior year, get ready for the new year, establish goals, and also align with reporting of, you know, financial statements and things like that. So we'll see where that, you know, it's nice. It would be good to have goals set before the performance period starts, but in practicality and a lot of what's going on at, you know, employers and banks and other, you know, institutions, it may not be feasible. So we'll see where that one goes as well. But those are the kind of the bigger elements or questions that are being put out there by these agencies.
Yeah, that makes sense. Some potential simplifications. So what should financial institutions think about doing today?
Yeah, so there's been a desire to finalize the required rulemaking from Dodd-Frank. We saw that with the, you know, clawback policy requirements that I mentioned before for public companies, and, you know, kind of reproposing these rules on clawback on incentive-based compensation is kind of fits with that theme. So we do expect there to be some comments and pushback on some of these, you know, provisions, but the fact that federal agencies are reopening these proposal rules and talking about it does, you know, when there'd be some sort of finalization of rules at some point here soon. And we've seen finalization of rules in other jurisdictions like Australia and Canada and the UK, for example, as well. And so, you know, banks and financial institutions have been kind of implementing their own changes to kind of, you know, manage risk and ensure their incentive programs don't encourage excessive risk taking. And so as part of that process, the ongoing process they're going through now, really should consider how these newly proposed or re-proposed rules and suggest alternatives could impact the other compensation programs going forward.
And so a financial institution doesn't explicitly have to follow these rules until they're finalized?
That's accurate. You know, but one of the things that, you know, institutions are cognizant of is public perception as well. And so while these rules aren't final, they don't need to, you know, meet all of them or be required to meet all of them until they're finalized. They are still looking to make sure that their incentive programs aren't encouraging excessive risk taking, partly because of what the potential could be for the public perception or compensation programs, and you know, if something were to happen with the bank or institution and there were some problematic pay practices, that would just be some negative feedback that they probably don't want to receive.
Yeah, that makes sense. And like you said, great to take a look now at the way the proposed rules are changing and what impacts, as if they were finalized, that might have on compensation programs. So there may be less implementation later.
And the goal will be also to not have as much prescription when it comes to the rules. There's not too many industries that have, you know, very prescriptive rules and requirements around incentive compensation. I think financial institutions are somewhat unique in this area. And so the effect that they can, you know, prove that they're managing it themselves and, as an industry and making changes and ensuring that they're not encouraging excessive risk taking, the thought would be that maybe we'd have less prescriptive rules. But, you know, we'll see. That hasn't worked out in other jurisdictions, though.
Now I want to circle back to tax for a second. So thinking about our tax colleagues at the financial institutions, what should they be considering?
Yeah, so like as we mentioned, you know, many financial institutions have already implemented kind of clawback policies, as well as kind of implemented mandatory deferral periods. And those bring along various tax considerations and rules, especially now when you're trying to modify potentially existing deferral programs. And so, you know, care should be taken, tax teams should be involved when, you know, an institution is considering modifying existing compensation deferral programs or even implementing a new deferral program. To ensure that those are tax compliant, for example, with, you know, compliant with Section 409 Cap A. Additionally, deferral of compensation, as well as some of the, you know, some of these prescriptive provisions we talked about, could have an impact on when compensation is considered, you know, vested, or when an individual actually receives that compensation. And so those could have an impact on when compensation is deductible by the employer. And so understanding the compensation provisions, the timing of the incentive compensation payouts, is important to ensure that appropriate compensation deductions are taken. A lot of nuance, a lot of areas that that could impact, you know, that with the timing of those deductions. Lastly, the mechanics of clawing back compensation, especially compensation that's earned and paid in the prior year, can be complex. We have a separate article that kind of goes into a discussion and provides some practical examples of ways employers can recoup previously earned compensation from impacted individuals. That's more tailored to the clawback requirements that were put in place for public companies, but similar kind of concept and examples that apply here as well.
So it really sounds like this is another area where corporate tax, HR, comp and ben really need to be well aligned.
That's very accurate. And I would throw risk management in there as well. But yeah, you know, having tax, HR, and risk management involved, yeah, would be is critical here.
Any timing expectations as to when you think these will be finalized?
I wish I knew. Hopefully it's not another 8 years before it's finalized. I will say, well, you know, we talked about, you know, three of the six federal agencies are kind of re-proposing or reopening these. The two biggest agencies, I would say, you know, the Federal Reserve, SEC, did not, you know, sign on to reopening, at least, you know, from this rulemaking perspective. But they have publicly acknowledged it, and it's part of, you know, it is a priority of theirs, a published priority to finalize these. So there's some question of what the issue is that they're trying to solve for. Banks keep, you know, financial institutions keep kind of modifying their, you know, programs in light of these kind of proposed rules. But there is, you know, some level of effort being put in on all agencies, whether or not they're signing on to these pre-proposed rules. So I think there's a desire to get Dodd-Frank and all the rules around it finalized and not have anything kind of hanging out there anymore. Some folks have talked about it being kind of finalized by the end of the calendar year. That may be aggressive, but I'm hoping for, you know, sometime, you know, in the next year or two.
So one best practice may be that banks revisit their compensation programs, take a look at the processes they have for mitigating against potential for excessive risk taking by incentive plan participants. It's good to ensure that these institutions have the right provisions and process in place to balance incentive plan reward along with institutional risk. They certainly probably need to stay competitive with the external market, but balance all of these things together. And it sounds like the proposed rules are definitely nuanced, and the results of them can mean complex tax requirements or adjustments that corporate tax may need to take in consideration, working in conjunction with HR and risk. Eric, thank you for talking us through this topic today. Great insights, and I look forward to seeing what happens over the next several months with the finalization of the rules. And then we can have you back at that time to tell us if anything changed.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we would love to come back and hope we get some finalization here soon. And, you know, pleasure being here, and thanks for having me, and look forward to coming back again in the future.
Excellent. And to our audience, thank you for joining us today. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.